This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
We're very excited to talk to this gentleman.
Yeah, because we love this event every year, don't we?
We do. And it is Fringe Furniture at the Fringe Festival, funnily enough.
I've heard about that.
And we've got Dan Coop in the studio. Thanks for coming in, Dan.
Oh, pleasure. Thanks for having me in.
You're very welcome.
Now, what's your role with Fringe Furniture?
I always have to take a deep breath. It is the creative program producer.
Right.
Yeah.
So we'll come back to that. How did you get to that moment in time?
Yeah, that is a really good question. Totally by accident. I loved drama in high school. So, you know, kind of my primary passion in life was always kind of art and literature and all that kind of stuff. I ended up doing it at university. And then kind of, yeah, it was actually the Melbourne Fringe. And this is not me just kind of talking about that because that's where I work. But I was like, well, I love watching movies and I love going to the theatre, but I want to make stuff. I want to get my hands dirty. And so even from first year uni, like I was 19 and we were doing fringe shows. So that's kind of how I learnt.
What sort of fringe shows were you doing back then?
Oh, gosh. But this is, I wiped it from the internet. I don't want to now reveal. No. We did a show in a church building on Nicholson Street in Carlton. And we made the set ourselves. It wasn't a theatre, so we kind of, you know, put all the lights up and did all that stuff, you know, from the ground up.
Yep.
And so that's kind of how I learned the skills of being a producer, because like when you're doing that, you, that kind of independent work, no one's asking you to do it. No one's giving you all the information. You just kind of have to figure it out and get your hands dirty. So over time, I realised that I loved making things happen. So that's kind of the role of a producer as far as I'm concerned.
And how did that first show go?
We had this really terrifying moment about an hour before the performance where someone knocked on the door and we're like, yeah, you're an hour early, come back later. And they were like, yeah, okay, sure. And we looked around the room at all the cast and we're like, so was that one of your friends? Or was that one of your friends? And then we realised it was just some weirdo from Brunswick Street, you know, who'd just kind of come up to see a show and we didn't know them and it was terrifying and amazing. And so the show was not a creative success, but it was a milestone in my own, you know, kind of journey, and it was heaps of fun. Yeah.
What else did you do along the way?
I actually, around that time, we did another show in a laundrette not long after that, and that was really exciting for me.
Oh, what was that called?
That was called Laundry at 4 a.m. So the premise was that, you know, you were in a laundrette doing laundry at night.
Yep.
And this little play broke out. And while I...
Whereabouts was that staged?
That was in Carlton and Elgin Street.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I saw a similar one over in... on west of the city.
Okay.
So it wasn't yours, obviously.
No, not mine.
Yeah. Okay. Somebody had a similar
Quite often
idea.
You find out, yeah, you're not the first person to have come up with some of these ideas. But for me, that got me really fascinated with non-traditional performance spaces and art spaces. So basically, in the last 10 years, I haven't done anything in a theatre, personally. I've done a master's of public art, and so I'm really kind of fascinated in that kind of thing that engages with people in an everyday sense.
Right. What do you mean by public art?
Yeah, well, it's a great question because sometimes it's just outdoor art. And, you know, public art to some people is, you know, Hosier Lane with the graffiti on it. Mm. For some people, it's a parade. For some people, it's, you know, a statue. For me, because I have this performance and theatre background, I'm really fascinated by live events. So I kind of always mix the everyday into my live events. So
you're like, all of a sudden a performance will happen, or do you plan it a little bit?
Well, yeah, and then that's the kind of more busking or kind of promenade end of things. One thing I did, which is easy to explain, was I rowed people across the Yarra River in a little inflatable boat.
Right.
And I had a conversation with them as I went across. And so that was a kind of rite of passage from one side to the other.
How did you get the permission to do it?
It took a while. and this is where the producing skills come in. So I'm one of these people who makes their own work, but like here at Fringe, I'm a facilitator in that sense. So, you'd be surprised at how many rights you have in public actually to do the things that you want to do. And so, for example, if you want to get on the river, you're allowed.
I thought there would have been really strict...
They made us, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's, there's no question. And I had to buy a pretty decent, hefty insurance policy because, you know, you don't want to lose anybody in an art event, do you? But, look.
And was that popular?
Well, we sold out, but, you know, when there's only an audience of one in a boat, you know, that's not hard to do. But, you know, I still put the sold out sticker up.
So how many people session did you get across?
Well, we had four people an hour because there was also something on the pedestrian bridge and there was something on either side of the river on the bank. We had four people an hour and we did six sessions a day. So I think, if my math is right, we had an audience of 24 per day and we did it for 10 days.
Right. Yeah. So obviously it wasn't a great financial windfall.
No. The way I would articulate it is that it had a low yield, but it was of great value. Yes.
And was it satisfying? Did you? Mm. And yeah. You know, like, did the people enjoy?
Yeah. Well, it was immensely satisfying for me because I'm a Melburnian, so I'm quite proud of this city in a lot of ways. I'm parochial, I guess, in that sense as well. I really like it as a place, and I want people to experience it. So, like you're saying, not everyone has the right to go on the river, and I'm not a private school kid who ended up doing rowing on the river every morning. So for me, even, it was an exotic thing almost in my own hometown.
Was it hard work rowing across? If the wind blew up it?
I was definitely fitter after it than I was at the beginning, let's put it that way. Okay. Yeah, but the wind was the hardest thing actually. Not the current, so to speak, but the wind, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. What else?
So I guess that's creative stuff I've done. So that was with the Next Wave Festival, and I did that with a whole team. And so I kind of have worked on other festivals. I lived in Brisbane for a while. I worked at the Brisbane Powerhouse up there. That's a little bit like a combination of the Malt House and the Art Centre that we have here.
Yep.
So we did lots of touring works, but lots of nationally based works as well. Lots of different art forms, so dance, theatre, performance, lots of comedy, music.
Because they seem to be doing a fair bit of, you know, like, pretty good stuff up there, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Look, I mean, like I said, I'm a proud Melburnian, but I actually have a really great respect for Brisbane. And, I know for a fact that, about half of the creative scene in Melbourne is actually Queensland expats.
Mm. Well, yes, I wouldn't call myself creative, but I am a Queensland expat.
Yeah. So there you go. And you know, Melbourne's a really lucky city in that sense, isn't it? We get a lot of people from around the country and New Zealand
the world. Yeah. You know, like on this show, we're blown away with how few Melburnians actually come on the show.
A lot of people who split their time between Melbourne and other places as well. So. Well,
look, at Fringe, we do a lot of artist development work. And one thing I do say to people when they're on that verge of making a profession out of it is that you have to... I think it's good to look at the whole country as your playing field, not just your own city. And if you can kind of develop some of those links throughout the country, then you can have a viable career. Mm. But it's hard to do that. You know, as big as Melbourne is as a city, it's still, you know...
It's still not small.
New York, let's be frank, you know?
But what blows me away, and somebody like yourself who is heavily involved in it, why is Melbourne such the cultural city that it is? And everyone that comes on, you know, like contemporary dance, it's the hub here.
Amazing contemporary dance in Melbourne.
You know, like our last guest is, he actually paints, he's an artist, but he paints in book form.
Uh-huh.
And it's here in Melbourne where the bulk of the Australians that do it live and work in that world. The music scene, you know, like what is it about this city that is so much and you know, like now the NGV, what they're doing is just mind blowing.
I think they've taken a really interesting turn, NGV, recently. But I mean, my interest in public art means that the study I did is almost in. Partly like town planning and design and architecture, all those things kind of overlapped, which I really like. Mm. That's why I've actually got, you know, some interest in fringe furniture as a design thing, and we'll get to that. But yeah, like I think that it's the architecture of Melbourne that makes it what it is. We have a city that is built in a way that we've got all these kinds of great bars and congregation points indoors because it's not an outdoor city in the same way that Sydney is or Brisbane is. Mm-hmm. So if you go to Brisbane in New Farm Park, there's people working on their circus acts in the sunshine in the park because that's what you do there. Whereas in Melbourne, we're kind of more like, all right, let's kind of get into a small room and conspire and have drinks and stay up late at night and go out dancing. And, you know, it's kind of a bit more of an indoor place like that in a... you know, the grid also kind of provides all these wonderful opportunities for, you know, we know street art is a graffiti thing, but, you know, the laneway projects that have been going on in Melbourne for about 10 years have been these amazing sculptural projects in these hidden places.
Yep. I've just been blown away with the street art, how it's now a tourist attraction, isn't it?
Oh, you know, big time.
It's just crazy now. You know, like you see people wandering around and the laneways are full of people just checking it out.
I'm not even joking. I just bumped into some people from Florida who were with a friend of mine, and we were saying, oh, so what do we do in Melbourne? And I said, oh, well, you could go to West Space. That's, you know, one of your neighbours down below here. You could go and get a fantastic coffee, and you can kind of maybe go shopping. You know, it's one of those three things is that, you know, Melbourne city is known for, like, you know, internationally,
Yeah. All right, let's get talking about what you've come... And now, tell us what your role is at Fringe Festival.
Yeah. So, Melbourne Fringe is an inclusive, multi-art form festival. So, it's also open access, which is a really key point. So, we say if you're an artist or even an, you know... amateur artist, a kind of wannabe artist, and you've got something to say and do, you're welcome in Melbourne Fringe.
Well, basically, that's what it really started out, wasn't it? You know, like for the fringe dwellers to have a voice.
Yeah, and well, what's interesting about Melbourne Fringe compared to the worldwide fringe festival phenomenon is that Fringe was started by the local artists, whereas often in many places it was in like an opposition to the mainstream arts festival that had started.
Yep.
But Melbourne being Melbourne, and this goes way back to what we're talking about, why is it like this?
Yep.
It was started by the artists when there was nothing. So it's a self-starting kind of city, and it's a city where people want to, you know, contribute their voice. So, you know, it's been like that for 35 years. But my job as well, I work on the side of things where I do a lot of artist development for those people making their own works, but I also work on the side of our festival where we commission a few artists to do some things and manage a few things to create the opportunity. So Fringe Furniture is one of those.
Now, why, you know, like, you sort of have explained it, why isn't the Fringe Festival here as big as what the Adelaide Fringe Festival is, which is just crazy?
I will start this by saying I love the Adelaide Fringe Festival. I think it's wonderful. I have a great time every time I go. Perth, actually, their Fringe World Festival is now just as big. It's about 750 things. Yeah,
right,
okay. Goes for about a month. Personally, I think we're really lucky in Melbourne that we don't need to put everything into one month. We are a city in Melbourne where we have art and culture all year round. Like I've already mentioned Next Wave Festival. We've got our comedy festival. We've just finished MIF. What else is coming
well,
up?
Well, the main arts festival, Jonathan, the artistic director, said at the media launch the other week, is that how do you put another festival on in Melbourne? Mm. You know, it doesn't have to be a blockbuster festival like when they do the arts festival in Perth. The Giants was his last one that everyone was talking about, and it must have been incredible, where you don't do that in Melbourne. Melbourne people, you know, like, because something's happening every week.
Yeah, and you would know, having people come into the studio every week, it's actually hard to keep up with everything.
Mm.
So why isn't it as big as Adelaide? A, because it doesn't need to be, and B, because it's a festival largely made by the people of Melbourne, whereas Adelaide is largely a festival made by people who come and visit. So in that sense, it plays a different role, just basically.
But I look at a city like Adelaide, because I'm originally from there, and how, you know, like they must be so poor at the end of it, because they're out all the time, and it's well supported. Okay, you know, like, I think that it's just got a little bit too big and some shows aren't working now. But considering that Melbourne has an arts a fringe festival, and, you know, like, we don't support it as much because, why don't we? It's because there is so much on, or...
Look, I mean, the last couple of years have trended upwards in terms of ticket sales and upwards in terms of participation. So, in fact, Melbourne Fringe is bigger than it's ever been. So, we're finding it's more and more supported. I just don't think it needs to be the be-all and end-all of all presentation of independent art. I think in Melbourne we just have so many wonderful opportunities to present independent art. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to come back to you because you are here for a particular reason. It's just the Fringe Festival on the whole,
which is
good. We're here to talk about Fringe Furniture, and we'll do that just after these breaks. You're on Sunday Arts Magazine.
We are talking with Dan Coop, and we're going to get talking about Fringe Furniture. So, Dan, you know, how long has Fringe Furniture been around?
This is year 31.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Isn't it?
Last year we had the guy that started it.
Ah, Bruce Philly.
Yeah. And he was delightful. And he actually even had a piece in it last year as well.
He did. He came back. Yeah. We talked to Bruce a lot last year about the origins of the event and traced a few of the kind of alumni from that year and where they went. And, you know, there's amazing careers have come out of it, yeah.
And what is it about Fringe Furniture that it's lasted 31 years?
Yeah, I think it's unique among design and visual arts and everything like that, that it's still an open access exhibition. If you've got a piece, you're welcome. So a lot of these things
are heavily curated.
So you don't control
it?
Not really, no.
So if I, you know, let's hammered some nails in top of a piece of wood, I would get in.
Yeah, but your name would go on it, so you'd have to stand by it and kind of, you know, be happy with that. And I think that's where it kicks in. Everyone has quite a lot of personal pride and is very excited. So, yeah, it's a varied exhibition as a result of that. But I'd actually say it's very, very high quality. It's one of the most reliable, high-quality things in Fringe.
What I love about it is that when you go along to it, and quite often the actual artist or the maker is there, and the pride they're having talking about their piece, but it's also there because they're selling their work, and a lot of them are MIT students or whatever.
Yeah, Holmes Glen, we've got people, you know, from all kinds of disciplines all over, because, again, this slightly goes into architecture and interior design and things like that as well. So there's, you know, design is another strong strand of Melbourne's cultural output, yeah.
Yeah. So what's exciting and new about this year's...
Yeah, what can we expect?
Yeah. Come on, you've got to top yourself after 30 years.
I know, yeah. Well, you know, it's a little bit of last year we had a bit of a retrospective, so now we're looking forward a bit more again, you know, kind of going, you know, what's happening today and who's practicing. Well, the whole theme for the festival is out of the echo chamber, and it's one of those themes that kind of came up after we'd, you know, been paying attention to politics, paying attention to the screeching left and right debates, and kind of going, well, you know, sure, we're all for independent arts, we're all for kind of liberal-minded, you know, inclusive kind of ideas, but are we listening to the other side as well, and how do we draw people in? So we've kind of put that back to the designers and said, you know, have you got any design ideas that take kind of concrete form with this out of the echo chamber idea? So a lot of them are kind of propositional designs that will kind of, you know, make you look at things anew and make you kind of go that there's not a single way to do things and there's not a single correct perspective. In fact, the more you look into things, the more hopefully it gets more interesting and kind of overlapping, yeah.
Yeah.
And does that sort of involve moving away from form and function and looking at more of a maybe an avant-garde sort of opinion on art, on furniture?
Absolutely. And that's why Fringe Furniture has kind of stood the test of time, is because there's a strong concept there, which is design is usually going, being crafted and kind of shaped into a very functional, practical thing. But Fringe Furniture has always been about exploding it outwards, actually, and kind of making it into a propositional or experimental kind of thing. And we know that those experiments then turn into wonderful designs that can, you know, be shaped back the other way.
Yeah.
So it's always been about experimentation and the weird side of things, almost in a way like almost the art side of things rather than the functional design side of things.
Although a lot of it is, or you know, like, I think a lot of people like a bit of an art piece in the furniture in their house, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there was a piece last year that was just beautiful. It was a light fixture that was made to look like a kind of in an egg shape, you know? So it had these beautiful natural lines and everything, but it was actually made out of broken eggshells. And so that's one of those examples where they'd kind of had a quite abstract and but beautiful idea and then kind of actually made the materials make sense and kind of, you know, invested that back in. So it wasn't simply about the idea, it wasn't simply about the execution. It was a really interesting marriment of the both.
Yeah. How many pieces this year?
We've got just over 115.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and I think we've got 100 designers, so a few have got two pieces in there, but yeah, it's a really big exhibition this year, yeah.
Okay. And where is it?
It's at the Abbotsford Convent.
Right.
In the Rosina Auditorium.
Right, and that's where it is every year?
Well, actually, it was just next door. They're doing a bit of redevelopment work.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, the convent has many amazing spaces. So we're just in right next door to where we used to be. But
right.
Yeah, in the last 2 years, we've actually had it spread over two rooms.
Yes.
And now it's just in one large room, so it'll be a really nice space
to exhibit. That whole room. Yeah.
It's okay. Sometimes used as a dance studio, so it's got these mirrors up there, and sometimes it's used as a stage.
Yeah,
there you go.
Lippy, pop Lippy on.
What I was going to ask as well is, you know, do you find that a lot of the makers actually get to talk to each other and sort of share notes about furniture?
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of what Fringe is. Mm. You know, as a broad thing, sure, we're making objects or we're making performances or we're making exhibitions, but actually the big thing that we do as staff is we try and make sure we're making a community, even if it's a temporary one for 3 weeks, you know? So yeah, we run a mentor program and we get some of the kind of alumni from the program to come back and talk to the emerging designers. So they get together three or four times in the lead up to the event. We have artist talks and tours so that punters and the designers can kind of meet each other and talk about their works. And we also have a tactile tour, which is, you know...
What's that?
Well, they're mostly for, you know, designed in a way for people who are blind or have low vision, so that you can touch the objects instead of just kind of going... Because if you can't see it, are you experiencing it? Sure, you can sit on a seat sometimes and that'll give you a feeling, but, you know, what are the aesthetic choices that have been made, you know, in terms of timber colour, finish, the texture of it, you know? So we have an audio describer called Nilgan who comes in and she's very amazing. She's trained up in describing, you know, what this room would look like. She could paint a picture with words. But then actually the most fun part of it is once we've done all that and we've kind of said, oh, this is what the designer was thinking about, this is what they tried to achieve, then we kind of close our eyes and we touch it and we sit on it and we get to meet it as a tactile object, not just as a visual object.
Right. And are you actually invited people who can't see into the exhibition? Have you, you know, reached out?
Yeah, so this is like, at Fringe we think about, you know, inclusivity a lot, and, you know, one of the ways we do that is to make sure that we have different points of entry for people who may be experiencing disability.
Yeah.
So, you know, for a performance, a text performance, let's say, a play, you might have an Auslan interpreter or you might have surtitles. But because this is such a visual medium, for those people who can't, you know, access that, we have, you know, these people come in and do tactile tours and audio described tours and, yeah. So there's actual sessions you can book a ticket to and come along and do
right.
that.
Right. But it wouldn't be every piece because some of them are a bit fragile that you don't want people picking them up or dropping them.
This has happened once or twice where we're like, I know that chair looks amazing and I know it looks like it's sturdy, but it's a prototype. Mm. And so sometimes we actually do have to say, not this one, you can't sit on this one. But yeah, there's plenty that you can engage with and touch and you know, three of us are sitting on stools right now. Everyone who's, you know, either listening in their car or at home doing the dishes, you know, if they're still kind of engaging with what we're talking about, furniture and interior design and all those things. It's a tactile thing.
Yep. Oh, very much so. Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense to us to just take that extra leap and invite that for these sessions.
And I love the ad that you have for it, which is in your wonderful brochure with all your programs in it. Describe it to us.
Well, see now, if I put my audio describer hat on, we have a photograph. There are two legs coming in from outside the frame of the photograph and they have stripy socks on and they're actually dipping their toes in a way, if you will. They've pointed their feet into these holes in a table. So
that's this a coffee table.
has circular sections cut out of it. And they're kind of dipping in and they're kind of engaging with the table in a way that you wouldn't normally do. Normally you'd have a flat table. You want it flat so that it can put things on it. But this is a great example of a table that is at once beautiful and practical, but also experimental. It actually has these holes in it that kind of make it look like a wonderful piece.
Yeah, and that's the sort of thing that I would love to have in my home.
Yeah.
But you know, like after a few drinks, it could be a bit dangerous putting a glass down.
So this work was in the festival last year, and actually, what it has is it has these kind of imagine a plate, you know, kind of circular thing, and it fits into the hole.
Ah.
And you can take that out again and flip it over.
Ah.
So you could have it completely flat if you wanted.
Wow.
Or you can take it out and flip it over. And then when you flip it over, it's got this kind of green felt bump.
Looks like
on
grass.
It looks like a grassy knoll, doesn't
it?
Yeah.
Mm. Well, because I have artificial grass as my mats apartment. So that's why I'd love
that'd
it.
Be perfect,
yeah.
Especially after your second glass of rest.
Yeah, exactly. So, so it's so much fun. Mm. You know, well, just the photograph, isn't
it? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And I didn't realize that you actually slot them back in.
Yeah.
How creative.
So this is part of what the exhibition's so good at, is that there is a lot of experimental stuff in there that isn't practical, but actually with a little tweak you realise how they are going to change this into a very marketable and market ready product.
Yeah.
So they're kind of in that gap quite often between I have this fantastic idea and it's a proposition to I think I've figured it out. You know, you see all different parts in that process.
Yeah. Mm. Because that would look good when they're flipped over and it's just flat on top.
Yeah.
And you see the green bumps underneath as well.
There you go, yeah.
The green bumps on top.
That's right.
Mm. Brilliant. Who designed it? Do you know?
I do.
Oh, sorry, I put you on the spot there.
Yeah, no, but this was Marie Lafave last year, and it's the stepping stone sitting table. So you can kind of take those off and use them as little stepping stones onto the table.
Yeah. Cute.
Kids would love that.
Yeah, they would. I would love it.
Last year we had some furniture for children, and that was fantastic. Yeah.
So how do you find out more about the Fringe?
Yeah, well, the website's the number one way these days. Go to melbournefringe.com.au and you'll find our whole program up there.
Yep.
We've worked on it pretty hard this year, so you can kind of choose things in different ways. You can say, I'm just interested in theatre, or I'm just interested in queer performance, or I'm just interested in things that are free. There's all these little functions in there that you can choose.
And what do you say to people that, you know, want to try something a little bit different, something a bit more fringy at Fringe?
Oh, well, then you've come to the right place. This is all about, kind of being brave and stepping out. There's some of those great acts that we know and might have been on telly or, seen them in previous years. But, if you go to the Hub, for example, in North Melbourne, where we have a lot of our activity based, you can go and see the show that it's got your mate in it or your kind of known star in it. And then, because there's like 30 things on a night, you can just basically go and chat to the box office, get another ticket and go and see something you don't know about.
Mm.
And what I think is exciting about Fringe is that it is so inclusive. And so it's... That comes out in many ways. So you might see a piece of contemporary dance and then go and see a very, how would you put it, traditional piece of theatre performance. But they're actually quite different formally, but they're both part of, like, what's going on in this city.
Yep.
Mm.
And then, to another extreme, there's a gospel group singing down at the National Theatre, and I hear they're amazing.
I wish I could remember the name, but there is a group doing Sister Act in the St. Paul's Cathedral.
Oh, really?
They're actually getting into St. Paul's and singing Sister Act tunes. Exactly. So you get these kind of amazing one-off things as well.
Oh, that sounds so much fun.
Yeah.
So how can you pick up a program?
Well, the programs are all around town. You'll see them in, cafes and things like that. But, yeah, I reckon the website's the number one place with all the info, But if you see a bright yellow guide out there with Everything is Art for 2.5 weeks on the front cover, that's Melbourne Fringe.
Right. And when does it start?
Yeah, we start on the 14th of September.
Right. And so it goes to the 10th of October.
1st of October. So it's
1st of October.
Yeah, two and a half weeks. 2.5 weeks, 3 weekends.
Right. Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, I'd love to chat. This has been great. Thanks.
Yeah.
Until next time, thanks, Dan Coop from Fringe Furniture and Fringe Festival. You're on Joy 94.9 on Sunday Arts Magazine.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.